Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. Hosted by Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Now listen up. It's time to crush the curse.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host. And today, I'm staying in Canada today. We're going to go over Eastern Canada to London, Ontario. And we are talking today to Dr. Laura Jean Baxter. She's one of our shifters, and we've been following her progress. And I really like her story and think that a lot of people can kind of relate. She's been out of practice or been in practice for 15 years. She graduated from CMCC. And like a lot of us, you know, we get a little bit crazy and busy and stressed out. And this, I think, will be a really good story for those people who are trying to get some balance, try to enjoy their practice without totally burning out their adrenal glands. So welcome to the podcast, my dear.
Yes, thank you. I'm super glad. On Facebook, it's Baxter, but people might know me as Gravel. So that's okay. It, Baxter Gravel, you can...
Okay. So either way.
Either way. That's me.
I'm like, just don't call me late for dinner. That's what I always say.
Dr. Laura. That's what everyone
Dr. Laura. There we go.
Dr. Laura. Yes.
So why don't you take us back to how you got into chiropractic in the first place?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, it's always been a part of my life. My parents always took me to the chiropractor. I used to be a competitive gymnast and swimmer and very active. And then it was an injury that took me to the chiropractor way back when. And it just was part of my life. And then I was away from chiropractic for a while before I got into chiropractic school. But my parents were always of the natural mindset. They're both teachers and they just thought let's try that first. And then, and it helped me for my injury. That's what got me into chiropractic, like I said, but I've, it also helped when, so I have four children and prior to the four children, it was not working. And I said, I'm the worst chiropractic patient because I had been away from it and not regular and went back to the chiropractor, my chiropractor at the time. And they did the whole thing. They said, this is our recommendations. And I said, absolutely. Within 2 months. So that's kind of, I mean,
within 2 months, you got pregnant.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
And we have four children now, so it's working.
It's working. Then some people, they have too many kids. They're like, now it's time to stop working.
How do we stop this? So I guess how I got into chiropractic was an injury, but just the way back when I was, that was in teenagers. So
important. Yeah.
So that was in the like 80s, 90s, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, well, that's 80s. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. So what made you decide to go to CMCC? Because I know at CMCC, do you kind of just because it was close or did you hear someone that went there?
It was just proximity. It was really just proximity. And I don't think I knew, Don, what was out there and what to compare it to. And that it was really the proximity. I mean, at the time I lived in, I went to Hamilton. So I went to McMaster first and did my undergrad there. And it was really just a proximity thing and a not knowing what's out there. That's really what took me to CMCC.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. And so would you say that it was kind of like what we call like subluxation based or principle based chiropractic? Is that what you were kind of exposed to when you were growing up or
was
it? Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yes, it was. It wasn't, it was, that's what I knew. And then when I go to CMCC, that is not what was or is currently taught there, I don't believe. But it was a different paradigm. I said, is this what chiropractic is? That's not what my chiropractor taught me and the language and words he used. But
Well, and so it's interesting. So when you go in, and it's funny because we've heard a few stories about this before where chiropractors have learnt kind of that vitalistic aspect of chiropractic, and then they went to school. And if they went to a school that was maybe a little bit on the mechanistic realm, they're in shock because they're learning something that's totally different than what they know. And we've heard of certain scenarios where the students went through the school and then were mad at that previous chiropractor because they're like, well, that's kind of witchcraft chiropractic. And then they'd struggle for a bit, and then they came back to the kind of the philosophical side. How did you deal with chiropractic school?
Oh, well, it was stressful, as we all know. I mean, I pedaled to the metal and grind mm-hmm. it out and get it done. And I mean, I leaned on, made some great friends in chiropractic college and learned, you know, what I needed to do to pass the boards to get out. That was really, I don't know if a lot of people think like that. It went to my,
school. Yeah.
You know what? It was nose to the grindstone is what that saying I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And just push through, do what has to be done. And it's 4 years of your life. It seems like a long time, but just 4 years of your life. And I mean, I enjoyed myself too. I mean, there was absolutely parts of it that I love too. Right. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah, that is fond memories of the 4 years and
at school.
Friends made and yeah.
Did you expose yourself to any other chiropractors down there? Like, did you go to any kind of seminars or surround yourself with like-minded people, or how did you do that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Try to get in with the groups in school who are like-minded like you, who might not resonate with the school completely. Mm-hmm. Take the technique courses. I wish I did more seminars at that time, but I would go out, I would meet with chiropractors, because I would watch what other, you know, upper years were doing, and, you know, you rinse and repeat, right? You watch what they're doing, and you don't have to redo the wheel. You watch what they're doing. If they're going out and they're looking into the what's out there in terms of the practices and the people, and are they going to this seminar? Well, maybe I should go to that seminar too, or at least check it out, make my own mind up, right? But yeah, absolutely. I got out of the bubble.
Yeah.
And did my own thing with other people, right? Just follow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I think that's probably good. And I know we have students listening to this podcast too. And so they always ask, like, what's some words of advice you could have going through school? And I think it's exactly that. Find like-minded people and learn as much as you can. Cause that was kind of our mentality too. And even when I was going to Palmer, you know, the number one thing in your brain, cause you're always worried about Canadian boards, is mm-hmm. all you think about is, oh, I got to get through the Canadian boards. But then once you're done Canadian boards, like, you never really see that material ever again in your life. And now you have to live your life. Now everything starts.
That's correct. It's what did they say in histology about that, right? There was one time something came up. I'm like, oh my God, that's it. That's my one time I'm going to be using that piece of information in my brain. Right?
That robbed years from my life from
correct.
The stress.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Get out there, go to as many seminars, because there's absolutely the student reduced rates. So go out and immerse yourself in what's out there. Some things will resonate people with, some people won't resonate, but take this opportunity. This is the time. It's like when your parents say, now's the time to travel.
Yeah.
Now's the time to see what else is out there.
That's awesome. So when you graduated then, you said in 2003?
2003.
Awesome.
Yep.
And so what did you do? Did you associate, open your own practice? How did you start?
Yeah, it's a story and a half. Do we only have 35 minutes?
Yeah.
No. So I associated with a gentleman in downtown Toronto. I thought, this is where I'm going to hang my hat. This is going to be great. I'm here. Well, he was on the 17th floor of like Bay and Dundas, right downtown Toronto, which is great for walk by traffic, right?
Yeah.
Like I was up. Oh my gosh, I still remember him. He collected little Smurfs. Like,
oh wow.
It was, yeah, the ones that like came in cereal boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I didn't, but I remember I'm always the mindset. People don't know you're out there going to shake hands and kiss babies and do the legwork, right?
Yep.
So I was out, if you know Toronto, it's right near the police station. I would go to the police station and knock on door, try to do a talk there and try to get my foot in the door. But I'm on the 17th floor of who's walking by, really?
Right. Yeah, totally.
Nobody. So then my husband and I had the opportunity. Oh, I think I did a little stint in I think I blocked this out, a little a physio med. It was like a rehab thing, which was just bad written all over it, and lasted there, you know, 6 months or so. But they were doing some shady thing. I said, you need to get out of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we moved to London, and my in-laws had, I was married to my husband at the time, but are my in-laws to be now, moved down here to London, and we came, and then I associated. So we ended up moving here, and I associated with the gentleman for 3.5 years, learned a lot. And I had to leave that practice, and then I started in my basement. So we started a family. And I literally came away from that practice broken and had nothing. And you start again, as you know, right?
Yeah.
And I was out to here pregnant and literally in bare walls of our new house, started the practice in 7x11. So 7 feet by 11 feet in an unfinished basement. People started to come to me and I was like 9 months pregnant. And
that's amazing.
I still remember the there was no drywall, like the drywall was half of the basement. There was nothing. And 7x11. This is my 7x11.
Yeah.
That's where I put a sign out on my front yard. I don't even know if to this day was allowed to do that because I wasn't zoned for commercial, but whatever. So we just built that way. We were going through a business loss of my husband's at the time, quite significant, and having a first child. And so I said, well, what do we have to do? We have to start somewhere, and really starting from all those patients that start again, right? And yeah. Build up. And then we ended up taking over the basement. It redid the basement. So I had a waiting room. Then I had another child 17 months later. So two children, then we had another child at the week before the third child. So I had four children in 5 years, but a week before the third child was due to be born, I said, we need to move the practice from the home.
There's a line now. That's, I need some separation.
Kept a nice house, pardon me, kept a nice house, but the potty seat would be on. There's a line.
That's awesome.
I look back and I think patients would hold, Dawn, patients would hold my one baby as I'm trying to adjust a person, and then another baby would, like, it was, oh my gosh. But I got sucked into the having your home in your office in the basement, because the joke was I would go down, do laundry, and it wasn't patient time. I would just get sucked into market. I was sucked into, this was like, you went down to do laundry 2 hours ago. Where are you? Right. But I was it. I was the one woman show.
Yeah.
I was running the booking. I was doing the everything.
Holy
so God. He wouldn't let me do laundry, I guess. But so then, then my journey took me to lease, and it was a huge, like, oh my God, can I do it? Can I grow? But I know to grow, I had to go out of my home, which was now our basement office, into about 800 square feet. And I was there for 3 years and then hired my first staff at that time. So here we are, I graduated in 03, and I say I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Mason, my first child, was born in 08. And in about 2011 is when I hired my first staff and got my first office. So
wow.
Between 2003 and 2011, I mean, there was 3 years there where I was in the home. So let's say about 2008 is when I say I really started practice.
Yeah.
So the first 5 years I just didn't know what to do, which direction to go. I wasn't led in the right way.
Yeah.
And then so we outgrew that office, and in 2012, we've moved up the street. So same main artery in London, called Oxford Street. Yep. And 1500 square feet now. And I say from basement to beyond, right? That's where I started. So I had the four children in 5 years, and we could talk about that if you want, but it was a challenge. I mean, it was for moms out there who are, or students even. I know a lot of students have children, and
yeah,
I didn't take a lot of time. I hardly took any time off. When I was in my home, my baby would come with me like 2 weeks,
So you're just full on like the whole time, right? I don't usually ask this question, but I just got inspired to this question right now. This is kind of from my own story too, is that if you could go back and talk to yourself in that state, what would you say to yourself?
Yeah. Oh God.
If you could time travel, like in Terminator, go back and see your younger self, and just what kind of advice do you think might you have needed at that time?
Oh my gosh. I think I'd say it's all going to work out. I mean, it's all going to work out. I don't know if I had to really push the pedal to the metal that much, but as you think your practice is your baby, right?
Yeah.
And if you are not in there, what will people, but it's the lab, right? It's the, are people going to go? Are they going to stay? Are they going to come? Are they wanting to appease them and help them, but maybe you have to help yourself more and really take the time. I mean, having a baby is a huge thing. I'm just right back on the treadmill. So I think maybe I would say, it's all going to be okay. It's all going to work out. But at the same time, like I mentioned before, we were in a, you know, financial kind of a turmoil-ish.
Yeah.
Of my husband. So you're like, put the hat on. Okay. Let's pedal to the metal. What do we do to make a change and put food on the table? Right.
Right.
And have diapers on and that sort of thing. Still pay mortgage and all that. So I did what needed to be done, but the business loss wasn't the case in the third child and the second, it was just really the first child. Right. Yet I did the same thing again and went back and thinking, oh no, I can do this. I can do this. You know, I've got this. I'll just bring the baby to work. And I'll just, well, yeah.
I'll carry like three kids at the same time while I'm adjusting everybody. Like, no worries.
Oh my gosh, Don. Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, and then we got thrown with our fourth child was very sick. So we were in the NICU for, she came at 35 weeks and she was pretty sick. So my life stopped. Like it stopped for a month. I was living in the NICU. I was at rounds. I don't even think I changed my clothes. I drove to the hospital en route all the multiple times a day. But life at that point, life stopped. But I think I've realized that, you know what, sometimes if you don't stop, life will stop you. And maybe that's what that was, right? One of those 2x4 moments that are, well, you've got to listen now, Laura, because you haven't been listening for the last little while.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Because I guess, again, there's things that we can control and things that we can't control. And sometimes just crazy things happen. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that story?
About my daughter, Lucy?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. So she was born at 35 weeks. She was born in 5 minutes. So she was very, very fast. And her when she was born, it's obviously in the NICU and there's a team of people there. And the lungs were not an issue normally with NICU babies. The lungs were an issue. She was breathing fine. She just needed a little CPAP and then she was fine. But what was problematic was her liver wasn't functioning. So her body was not going through the urea cycle. I'm trying to remember. Sometimes, you know, you just think, what was the issue? So her bowels weren't working. She was not unable to, they put formula through her and she was unable to process like massive diarrhea. And she lost a quarter of her body weight in 3 days.
Wow.
So her bowels weren't functioning and her liver wasn't functioning. So they had to take her off. It was, you know, we are from this vitalistic model and mindset, but when you're in the medical, you are just in the swirl of things and they were throwing diagnosis. They didn't know. And it's different. This. So they had to take her off all food. All her body chemistry was out of whack. So they knew, you know, what was high needed to be low, what was low needed to buy her CO2. It was all over the place. All her bicarbonates were all off. So they had to take her off all food so she wasn't fed, so she wouldn't go to the bathroom.
Right.
And they thought that she had ammonia had gone through the blood-brain barrier because she wasn't excreting it. So there you go. There's your urea cycle. That's the piece of information. I'm like, that's why I need
that. I learned that on boards.
So then I had, so this is like day 21 and she weighs 4 pounds and 7 ounces. Like she lost all of her body weight. They had to shave her. They had a PICC line in her heart.
Ooh. So,
yeah. Then she got a hospital borne infection and they had to shave her head and they put a IV right in her head, which that's when I lost. That's when I kept together until that point, but so a lot was going not right with her and, we couldn't couldn't feed at all. So it's all, they took her off all food. They're just giving her sugar water. So I had Peter Amlinger come, who's a great friend of mine. And I said, look, like the super friend. And I said, I can adjust her, but I'm like my life
I'm a
is
mess.
Tough. I'm a mess. So
yeah.
He came, I think he had to sign in as my dad or something into the NICU. But so this is like day, I don't know, 21, 20. Around there and we sat eat and he's upper cervical, so he adjusted her six times. So every 20 minutes for 2 hours. And I still remember this, every 20 minutes for 2 hours. And he, at the time, I didn't know upper cervical. Now I know upper cervical. So he showed me, okay. And he felt, she's holding the adjustment and I'm going to go now. And they're going to, so I said, okay, Pete, like he drove from Toronto for that and back. It's 2.5 hours each way.
Nice.
And he said, yeah. And he said, let's just look, let's look at this when they, cause they do blood work every 6 hours in the NICU. And the next round of blood work, these two strapping tall neuro, whatever guys in the NICU
with a fancy name,
I don't, strapping neonatologist. That's what.
Oh, there you go. That's a good big word.
Big word came and said, and standing over me, I'm disheveled, haven't showered. And they're like, I don't know. I still remember this, don't they? They said, I don't know what that chiropractor just did. And I'm like, thinking in my head, I don't want to fight. Like, just, I just, it's not the time.
You're like, piss off. It's my kid.
Yeah. Like, but then they said, all of Lucy's problems seem to be going away.
Wow.
So because they did the blood work and what her blood chemistry was all over the place. They knew what this ammonia was rising, which should be excreted.
Yeah.
But they said there's stress going on in the body. And I know what that means. It doesn't need drugs. It needs, you need to get this stuff out. So they were able to get the ammonia out, but the end of it was that her body was returning to balance, returning to homeostasis. Right. And wow. So we left the hospital 2 days later.
No so way.
Yeah. So that's my Lucy story. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. And just, I'm just curious because, especially as a parent, because like, that's why it's hard to, I would say it would be hard to adjust your own child because you're so emotionally invested. It's hard to be objective.
In that state. In that moment. Right.
100%. Plus, yeah, because you're so wanting everything to work that, you know, you kind of, that plays with your mind. But just in general, like that whole experience, did that increase your certainty in chiropractic?
Oh, absolutely. I tell that story every, not maybe as in depth as I just told you, but absolutely. It is probably why I became a chiropractor, to be put in that situation, to be there at the rounds. I never missed rounds. So rounds means they come around every day to talk about your child. And I could know exactly what they were talking about. If they're talking about the urea cycle and bicarbonate, I'm like, I know what you're talking about. Like, I'm not just a lay person.
Yeah.
And got all the nurses were talking. They're like, she's a chiropractor. What? So people, when Dr. Amlinger was there, you could see the people, you know, it's nothing to adjust. The child's just on his lap and his knee, right? And doing the upper cervical work is very gentle. But I think she fell asleep or was still asleep, as most times it is.
Yeah. The case,
but you could tell it. They're like, oh, yeah. So, and then we had follow up for 6 months, and now she has, I mean, her four, she's perfect now. Perfect.
That's
perfect,
so cool. Perfect. Yeah. Oh, I love to hear those stories.
And she makes her brothers tell her she's perfect every day, right? But yeah.
Just in case they forget.
So that's my Lucy story. And I know Pete, I go down to Dynamic Essentials down in Atlanta, and he is very prominent in Dynamic Essentials and took her story down there. And I go to Pure and Powerful here in London and shared her story there. And yeah, so I've shared it. Yeah, it's a pretty amazing story.
Well, that's so.
True. I mean, it's not a story.
It absolutely
happened. And
it's your life.
Changed your life, right?
And yeah.
Yeah. It was to touch and go there for.
Well, and I find too a lot of chiropractors that, you know, at the beginning, sometimes they'll say, "Well, I don't have an amazing story. Like, I just became a chiropractor." I've interviewed a lot of people that are quite prominent in the profession. Some of them, they're like, "It's kind of anticlimactic how I became a chiropractor." But you can borrow these stories.
Of course, use my story, change
right? Yeah,
absolutely. Read about, I wrote in Gilles LaMarche's book, "The Art of Healing: The Mothers and Children Healing Through Chiropractic." Her story is on page 88. Uh-huh. Take any of those stories. Oh my gosh. And I mean, you're telling the truth from somebody else's eyes, and you'll get your own stories. You'll get.
Yeah, that's it. And you hang on there till you get your own stuff, right?
You just need one. And then you repeat, share that story and that story, and just the more excited and authentic and real you can be with telling the positive changes in chiropractic in the life. I mean, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's a game changer. That's cool. So So then after this, you moved to your 1500 square foot office. Yeah. And how did you grow it? Like, how did that go? Like, was it tough? Did you have to be out there hustling?
Hustling. I was done. I'd take my kids to networking groups in the bed. Like, I'd be nursing and doing my elevator pitch. Like,
you go, girl. That's dedication.
I look back now and I'm like, there was like, yeah, you can call me crazy or like, maybe this was.
How about passionate? That's better.
Passionate. Yeah, 7 o'clock networking meeting. Elliot is coming with me. I've got Elliot and, you know, it's 7 a.m. and he's 2 months old. But no, you know, it's just getting out there, meeting people, doing talks, just getting your name out there, finding groups that you have that affinity with. And I never stopped. I think I handed out the, I don't know who it was, but it's the 5 business cards or 10 business cards a day, wherever.
I think that was Dr. Jill LaMarche.
Yeah, I think I handed out 2 a day, stimulating internal referrals. But I always said, and I don't know where I got this, but you people don't know just because you hang out your shingle, people aren't going to come to you. You got to get out in the community, make the connections, have business to business. The networking groups were great. I don't do that anymore just because my time is so finite that I'm like, is that the best use of my time right now? But I did the grind for that, business to business. So get to know people in your field, or maybe you have the same clients and make relationships there. Maybe that person will never come to you, but they'll be a lead, like a hairdresser. I've had a hairdresser never come to me, but refer a ton of people because they hear people's stories, right? She doesn't come, but she's a great, you know,
like an advocate. Well, it's just like, I got a really good friend. He's a medical doctor and he's never come to see me.
Yes.
But I think that's just like ego. Like, he's like, I can't go see him, but he's referred me like, over the last 15 years, probably like hundreds of people. Like,
look at that, eh?
Yeah. It's crazy. So that's the thing, is looking for referral sources too. Yeah. And if you can find a referral source, they can give you multiple referrals rather than just kind of going one by one, right?
It's the one to many. It's the one to many. And doing talks, and I love to do talks. I have backed off of doing talks because maybe we'll talk about it, but last year it was just part of the burnout process and I was just done with doing talks. So part of my plan this year, I don't think I have a talk schedule. It's okay. And I'm okay with that because I got talked out and all I was talking about was the stressy Susan avatar. And then that was me, right? That's what I thought. It was true. It was absolutely true. My, I can't remember what my title of my talk was, but I can't remember now, but it was that all on the stressy Susan. Mind your stress. That's what it's called. I came up with a clever mind your stress, but it turned on me. Now I reposition that, like, okay, we've got from that learning experience, I got a lot of people into the office who fell into that category. Like, I resonated with a lot of people. So there was a positive, but doing the talks is what I know we'll get back to do them, but right now I have to take a pause, but I do something like if screenings aren't for you, don't do them. If you love doing talks, do them. And I had my staff knew, okay, we need this set up, and they would go run with it. But that's how I built. I mean, I literally built from the ground up from 7 by 11 mm-hmm. up into all the way. My walls are now finished, you know.
That's awesome. Well, and like the thing that I really found was interesting is actually in our Vitality Shift group, we had a little competition for doing project-based goal setting rather than end outcome goal setting. And you were one of the ones that had done an amazing amount of stuff in January. So I kind of wanted to just tell listeners a little bit about how did you get out of that mindset? Because I know you've really decreased your stress at work. And I want to just kind of describe, like, how have you discovered that?
You got it. Well, let me take you back. Can I take you back to what happened to me?
And 100%. Yeah.
So, body talks to you in weird and wonderful ways. And I first got this, I was very sick last summer. And then that went to a very awful skin thing, like disfiguring skin thing. And I knew my adrenals were just tapped out. And it's been, well, we're in February. It's been an 8-month road of recovery now. Looking at just paring down everything, going to a naturopath, getting a, like just that whole well-rounded, but it came to a head, let's just say, when the stress was just overwhelming and you can feel that cortisol going through your body and it, you know, the negative impact that that has long-term, and it came out to me as immune and a horrible skin disfiguring. So that's when I knew I needed to make a change. And I believe that's probably when I got time is everything. I saw the vitality shift. Now I've always followed you guys. And I thought, well, I've spent so much, is this going to work? Like, cause you know, you spend money on them, but I knew
especially online programs, cause you can get them and then never finish them. And
yeah. But for some reason I said, no, this is going to be different. So I worked through the modules. I loved it. I implemented, and I'm a lady of action. So if I'm going to go, and not to the point of burnout, but I'm going to make changes. I'm not going to sit on it and say, well, that didn't work, because I'm going to implement. So I watched all of the videos and changed. Yeah, it changed the way I am in practice, the way I communicate in practice. I mean, I hired a second CA. I would never have done that, Don. My fear brain, reptilian brain was no. I look back, and this is just months ago, right? So we're February, Don. I think I hired her early December, and I look at how awesome she is now, and I hope she listens to this podcast and I'll share this with her, but well, she knows she's awesome, because I look to see how more efficient we are in the office because she is doing what she loves. I'm able to do what I am, change the way I do a new patient. Yeah, I was 30 minutes behind a closed door. How efficient is that? That's really not efficient. And right. Now I'm like, we can have two progress assessments going and a new patient. And sometimes we do things backwards. The other day we had a new patient and she did the testing. Like, I showed them the video first, and my orientation is online. I know you do yours. And I used to do that in the office, but because the kids, I'm like, no, I do it online now. So they watch a video, and she just went right into the vitality test, and I did the history at the end. Like, and it was the best one, that just because we had so much going on. And I said, we just had a flood in London. I don't know if you know, but half the city was underwater.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. 5,000 people were evacuated in Brantford, and it took my 7-minute drive the other day, took me 90.
Oh, jeepers.
90. Oh, yes. The roads were closed in London. So it was a day from, you know, water. I don't want to drink water that day.
Yeah.
And it was just, I explained to the patient, but it was the best one, right? So I have more, I think, adaptability and resiliency. Yes, we have to discuss things if things don't go, like if procedures weren't fault. That's a procedural thing. But this is a people thing. Okay, we have to deal with these people differently. So I just think putting my intention and effort into things that are going to make me grow. Whereas before I was tapped out. I wanted to grow. Absolutely. I want to grow, but I literally couldn't. I had to do all the progress assessments and all of the new people and I was just exhausted. I was literally exhausted. So, I think you have to make the space. So now my mind is, oh my gosh, it's a gift to have her in the office. And I'm cross training both of the ladies at the front, and we work as a team now, and I can literally look up and they know, or however we communicate, I don't even need to say anything. And we know, yep, that's what we talked about in huddle. Like, that's, we played it out exactly as it's, yeah. So just more communication is really the key. So yeah. So shifted a lot. I mean, we hired that second CA. The congruency, just the language, I think. And as we talked about that closed and open loops, I think you just ask people, just talk to people. And you may have to change the way you talk to people or the questions you asked, and get them to a point where, is this something you'd like to move forward with? Yes, this fabulous. And get right to the root of the objections. Whereas before I was like, well, what did I say? Are they coming back? Did we call them? Do they, like, is it their birthday? Like, what is, maybe they didn't like my pants. I don't know. Like,
I would say that too. And then Brandy go, did you talk to them? And I'm like, no.
Oh, no, I didn't talk.
I didn't talk to them. We can't address the problem. I want to just sit at home and not sleep and worry about what they're thinking.
Yeah. So I just think, you know what? Now we know. Perfect. And if now is not the time, like, just get to the root of the objection.
Yeah.
And so right now we are going back. So all the patients who are going through a progress assessment. They get the vitality test protocol now. So mm-hmm. it does take a little longer on their report of the progress assessment that one time to explain, now we do things differently, right? But yeah. once, yeah, and it's people are, oh, I had just some light bulb moments, I think, when your language and communication matches, you know, the congruency. People can tell if you're not walking your talk or what you say is not what you're representing in the office, right? So,
right. Did you find it a little bit less stressful too to kind of get away from like sort of treating conditions with subluxation and moving towards just optimizing function?
Yeah, and that's what we say. That's absolutely. Because then people are like, well, why is my low back not getting better? Why is my headaches not getting? Why mm-hmm. is my this? Why? And then you're internalizing and say, well, that's not. Well, yeah, you're right. Okay, well, maybe we'll try this. Maybe, yeah. So yeah, that in itself has been a journey too, right? To this is what we do. This is what we do in this office. If it is for you, great. And if it is not for you, okay. Right. That's great as well. Cause that's your decision. Yeah. So freeing, I think, right. Because this is what we do. This is, mm-hmm. and but you have to have language that matches that too.
Right. Yeah. So keeping things congruent in the office, right? Yeah.
Yep.
So I know in January you guys did a whole bunch of stuff because we had our little competition about people's projects. So can you give maybe the listeners some examples of projects that you did
in January? Sure. So for our project CA, I hired a tech. I scheduled, so what I have with her is a right rate of learning. So every week we know what we did last week, what is on our docket to accomplish this week. Now it involves the second CA in some sort of training or me going through it with her. She watched the videos. We do a proficiency test at the end of every week on one of our items from the previous week. We created a contract for her. I didn't have a contract. She knows what her duties is. She is also my marketing so she's my CA tech and she's my marketing. So before I was doing it all, as I'm sure at one time you were, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't do a heap of marketing. I have tried the Facebook ads and all that, but I do, there's stuff that needs to be posted up in the office. We have whiteboards, we have calendars, we have, you know, articles of the week, we have blogs, so she does that. We had a war room back in January with our whole group, our whole team, and we set out our topics for 6 months. We got to June and we did topics, we did in-office events, out-of-office events, if we're having a contest, and kind of rinse and repeated that for the whole 6 months, you know, followed that. And she's just gone and run with it. So she does my posts, my Hootsuite and all that, and links to if I have a offer or something. But I mean, I was doing that before. How can you do that as well? Your hats, you can't wear too many, right? I already, yeah.
So it's a lot of it was about delegating stuff, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. And not just, but in a fashion that everybody's on board. Yes. Absolutely delegating, letting go. Cause they can do it. Probably. I know she can do it 10 times better than I can. And she loves doing it. So that was the project that I guess has, I mean, they've all made big impacts, but the other one was congruency. So that's just, pardon me, the language and changing our forms, changing our language, changing our whiteboards, just changing so things matched. That was our project congruency, and in our own mind too, right? So having them watch all the videos, that's been amazing, right? So I haven't had to train them.
Yeah, you so you got something in training for him.
You guys have done the training for me, but they watch the videos and then we decompress, and then there's no not doing it right because they're watching the videos, right? And getting the content too. And then the other one is block booking. So before I wasn't doing that. Oh my gosh, I was trying at my best attempt at block booking. And I don't even know if our block booking now, I mean, how we have moved to it is we only do long visits when she's there, because she's not there all the time, right?
Right.
Like, we have so many hours. I work Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 to 12, 3 to 6:30. She is there part of that time. Every day for some days, but we don't book a long visit when she's not there. That's just not what we do. Mm-hmm. And we don't put a report at 3:30 when, you know, people are, because I'm going to get backlogged, and we just don't do that.
Right.
So we have specific times for that. So that was what my January, I really wanted to implement and know that all of this information is really put to work and seeing the outcome now. And you know what? Sure, you still have some things that throw you off, but I think one big thing I've learned is doing, not being at the external environmental triggers,
right?
At the influence of those. And it's how you respond, right? You can react.
Yes.
Or it's how you choose to respond, right? So that's something I'm still working on. But like the other day where there was a flood and people couldn't get to us. And you deal with it too, right? People, you know, but you just, yeah. So that's, so we've had a busy month and a half, but I know we've set the foundation and for the growth that we have been working towards probably before. And if I always say things like, you know, things happen at time and place and for a reason, that if I had the growth that I wanted, I don't know, even Dawn 6 months ago, I wouldn't be able to, handle it.
No.
I wouldn't have been able to, this is, I guess, what you call scaling properly, right? Like having the drive, the people on the bus and then getting the right people to drive the bus.
Right? And
And
tell me, because I know you've done, because we do once a month, we do like a long 3-hour training where we get everybody together. And you've started doing that too.
Maybe tell
a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So we had our first war room, and that wasn't really a training, but it was a war room in January just to set the stage. So that was like throw ideas to the wall and see what sticks, get out my marketing binders from the last 4 years that are, you know, at 4 inches, because I keep everything I send to a business, I keep it.
Yeah.
So we went through those, but that was, so every month we are going to have, usually on a Sunday, unfortunately, is when we can do it. It was 2 hours and it was just on a different topic. So I talk on a topic and then we go through a procedure. So the last topic I talked on was just the state of the nervous system and how we can ourselves keep in that state. And what happens if we get out of that state? So parasympathetic, sympathetically speaking.
Yeah.
And also how it relate that to patients too, right? So it was all about the state. It was from a heart math book that I took. I just happened to open because we use heart math for our heart rate variability. We don't use the CLA, but same thing.
Yeah.
Coherence and all that. And so I just happened to be reading it and I'm like, this is what I'm teaching on. So I taught it just a lesson or a little bit and got, you know, we had great interaction from the staff. And then we talked about procedural stuff and I follow, you know, people and process. Okay. So let's literally dissecting, and it may take us a while to dissect all of the procedures that we do. And I don't want to try to do it all in 1 week. And that's not the goal with the ladies.
Yeah.
I want them to understand. So even if they do something, okay, maybe I know in my mind that we're going to be changing this. But I want them to understand why we're changing it. So we'll have the training on that. So it's once a month that we do, and it's 2 hours. It's on a Sunday, and it's been just an awesome bonding experience, but also same page and really understanding. So we can make a bigger impact. So I say something, they know exactly what language, you know, I'm using, they're using, and
it's like a professional team, right? Everybody, they need to practice. You don't want to just only practice on the field, because that's when you get sloppy.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I used to do a team meeting like Monday at 10:30 during practice hours. Why would I do that? Well, I don't know. I don't know why I would do
that. Again, I think before you just fit it in. I should do a staff meeting. So I should do a staff meeting.
But we did one. Now we do our powwows. Like we do our powwows before morning shift and afternoon shift, because there's changes, right?
You bet.
And then we do 49 breaths every day as well. So it's a DE thing.
Cool.
It is cool. So I lead that. My staff doesn't lead that. I lead the 49 breaths. Now it doesn't take half an hour. We do it in about 7 minutes, but it doesn't matter. It's positive affirmations. It's relaxations. Actually, we do that before we get to any changes. If there's phone messages, we do that to clear the, I don't talk. We go in, we do breaths, and then let me know where we're at.
That's a great ritual.
It is. Yeah. So we do that in the morning, and then in the afternoon, we don't do breaths again, but we do our powwow and huddle. Okay. What's if things have changed, right? Mm-hmm. But I was trying to fit a staff meeting in on a Monday, and I was so focused on, I had a piece of paper, and it was okay. Goals, like you have told, you would focus on why didn't we hit, but we was focused on, okay, what was our goals? How far off the mark are we? What are we going to do this week? we just don't do that anymore. We have changed our, course, numbers and goals and that I track it. Of course I do, but I don't expend too much energy into, why are we less? Why are we not going in the right direction? I know that we're putting energy in foundational trainings that are going to just propel us forward. So,
we're focusing on the right inputs.
Yeah. Inputs. Yeah. So we don't do our staff meeting at 10:30 on a Monday anymore.
That's awesome.
I don't even know why I did that. But
well, and again, we all learn, right? So you don't want to be hard on ourselves. Absolutely. I know as a lab, we can be hard on ourselves, right? As amiable. So again, we just learn. So we just have to reframe it. So it's not like that was bad.
No, absolutely. It was not like it was bad. Like it was not, there was a learning opportunity for growth. And
it's better than no staff meeting.
It's better than no staff meeting. That's right.
Yeah. Just not optimal. So just in closing, we're kind of, I know time flew by real fast here. So, just in closing, I always like to ask all my guests if they have any words of wisdom for the people out there.
Yes. You know, what I would say is, just like the Chinese proverb is, you fall 7, rise 8. So I think if you, no matter how many times you fall, don't stay there, get back up. So keep trying, get down. You will all fall. We'll all get off. We'll all get knocked off. We'll all get sideswiped. But just keep on, get right back up on that horse and learn from that and keep going and growing. That would be my advice. Fall 7, rise 8.
That's fall 7, rise 8. That's great.
Chinese proverb. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an awesome thing. So everybody, we got lots of awesome tips. Dr. Laura, thanks so much for being on the call. Thanks for sharing the great stories. I think it's gonna be really inspirational from going from the little basement with the little bare walls.
Got it.
Up to where you've done now. So you've come a long way. So first of all, I just want to say congratulations for you. That's awesome.
Yeah. Still moving, still going. But I hope that people look at where they are and think, man, where could I go? Right? Like not, you got to start somewhere.
So. You got to start somewhere. All right. Well, everybody, take some of the stuff that we've learned today. Don't get stressed out. And if you do, get back on the horse, never give up. And don't forget to crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.